Blog Talk Radio.
Superstars, and we're out here at the Barbecue Superstars headquarters taking it easy. And sometimes it's good to just stay home and rest. You know, one thing that's kind of come up is Angus brisket versus Wagyu brisket. Now, I will admit, past last couple of years, Wagyu was number one. Because Angus people in different meat segments didn't really recognize barbecue competition. But they've all woke up to it now. And barbecue meat sales are really what's pushing the price of beef up. And now, Raider Red Meat, some of their briskets were brought out to the BWCS World Championships. It's Angus brisket, $3.38 a pound. And those briskets were big, thick, and beautiful. They were really, really quality briskets. You know, paying $160 for a Wagyu might be a complete waste of money now. Now, I sell Wagyu briskets on the Barbecue Superstars Butcher Shop. Wagyu brisket is a hot and fast brisket. You really can't cook it low and slow. Type of fat that's on a Wagyu, what little there is, melts out. It's a melting type fat. The fat on a Angus and all the rest of the briskets in America are fat that stays there. You know, if you don't trim the fat off of a Angus brisket, it'll be there gelled up when the brisket gets done. Now, that little membrane that's over the front of the brisket, it's been discovered now you can just burn that off. So you cook it with fat side down. If you do the maximum trim, you won't have quite as much fat as you would, but and then when you go to wrap it, you turn it back over so the membrane, thin membrane side of the brisket is down, and it'll get burnt off in the cooking process. To me, hot and fast for a brisket is 300 degrees. Now, a lot of people out there at 300 degrees can cook them in 6 hours. There was a competitor who didn't make it to the competition until 6 o'clock in the morning, and he won first place brisket and won the contest. So, you know, tell you the truth, an offset cooker has a bell-shaped temperature. So you add wood, it's at 225, it gets up to 350, maybe even 400, and then it drops back down to 225, and you put some more wood in it. Now, if you got yourself a barbecue guru and you're able to regulate that air, so try to maintain a 300-degree temperature, put wood in it. But if you got up at 4 o'clock in the morning of the contest and you can get your grill up to 300 degrees, at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can easily cook that brisket and get it up to 200, 205, 210, whatever your choice is. And get it ready and do a great job. That's what most of the competitors do. You know, that Angus brisket I saw was from Raider Red Meat. Was really, really a quality brisket. If you went to a contest with it, you'd have equal chance of winning the contest with that brisket that you would a Wagyu. Now, they put it out there. If you get higher than a select choice prime brisket, brisket was prime. $3.39 a pound. I don't doubt that pork will get up there before long. Boston butts have gotten really, really high. Pack of two, $65. Pack of two, $57. A case of Boston butts, a friend of mine told me today, $240. Now, it wasn't long ago, and a 180-pound hog cost $240. So, I think you would have got more yield out of that hog than you would those eight Boston butts. Eight Boston butts would be around, well, I don't know, it might be close. You might get 90 or 100 pounds out of the hog. Out of the Boston butt, you're going to get 80 pounds max. Probably more like 60 or 70. You know, I have to give meat packers credit because the pork and beef that's being put out is well hydrated. Really, when you go looking for a Boston butt at a meat packing place or at a grocery store, chicken's getting higher. Now, how can you justify chicken getting higher? The sales of meat, because of the barbecue explosion in America, is going up, up, up. I guess demand drives the market. You know, you start talking about 8,000 teams. Well, not only that, but I mean, the promotion of barbecue on YouTube. You know, really, the promotion of barbecue on YouTube is way more significant than barbecue competition. You know, barbecue competition ain't a drop in the bucket to, I don't know, 50 million views a week of all barbecue videos. Live stream, I don't know what all. You know, if you think about the amount of people now who are trying to go out and make a barbecue video, barbecue competition can't even begin to compete with that as far as impressions and numbers. You know, that's the whole problem with barbecue competition is crossing over to the general public. It almost doesn't. There's not enough significant attendance to barbecue competition to make a difference. The standings of media. Be honest with you, it's almost a complete waste of time. I don't know how these guys are trying to get all this money together for when really the results are nominal at best. So as far as analytics go, but, you know, I think the number one driving force behind the meat demand and explosion is YouTube, because there are millions of barbecue videos now. And there's millions of people maybe not putting out a lot of content, but if you get a million people that put out four videos, that's 4 million videos. I've got 2,000 videos of barbecue competition, and essentially everywhere in the United States. The only contest I hadn't shot in the United States is PNWBA. I never made it to Washington State or up that way. But I think it would be a valid thing for barbecue competitors everywhere to get a source of brisket, Angus brisket out of Texas. Now, Matt Alexander had a bunch of them. And his source of brisket is equivalent, essentially, to Wagyu. You know, you get these slick-tongued people out there on the circuit talking about Wagyu, Wagyu, Wagyu. Wagyu is the only thing you can use. You know how much Wagyu costs? I'm sure a lot of you do. And I'm telling you now, it's a waste of money. They have brisket in Texas they'll send to you frozen. That is $3.39 a pound. If it gets up to $4, big deal. What you paying now? $15? $20? Japanese have 14 grades of meat. We essentially have 4. And their 10 grades of meat are above our 4th. And their steaks cost $120 a pound, which that's the best meat there is. I have no doubt if you got the $300 a pound, 14th grade, and I've got them on my website for sale, you can go on Barbecue Superstars Butcher Shop and you can buy some $115 or $20 a pound steaks right now. They are going to be the absolute best steaks that you ever ate. Now, they're not playing on quality. But now, everything you get for a Wagyu product has got to be hot and fast. You got to cook it hot and fast. They're not made to sit around in a low and slow cooker all day. You need to crank that heat up and go ahead and cook it out and eat it. And I think it's just fantastic quality meat. It doesn't have to be burned all day. You know, you can get what you need in an hour with a steak or in, shoot, really 6 minutes, and you're good to go. Now, I knew that Texas had the, you know, equivalent meat, but I'd never seen it or experienced it for myself. So, you know, I couldn't testify as a testator that actually saw it. But I saw it at the BWCS World Championship, and Matt Alexander was the exemplifier. So if you can find Matt Alexander, Kiss My Rank Barbecue, on Facebook, try to find out from him where exactly he got those kits from, and call that place up and get a shipping agreement going with them. Pay a credit card. You get a $3.39 20-pound brisket, you're going to spend about $60 or $70, probably $10 shipping. The Wagyu's going to cost you $160. Well, if you win $3,000, why not pay $160 for a Wagyu? Why give them the money? Why even complete that system? Why let them? I mean, that's outrageous. You know, when you get below that Angus beef and you just get a Walmart Packer, Walmart Packers aren't that bad. You know, I think Walmart briskets are better than Sam's. I said that, but when I was going to do a show, I went to Walmart first, and then I thought I'd go to Sam's. I went over to Sam's, and they had some brisket in there. It looked just like Wagyu. 18, 19, 20-pound briskets that were competition-ready. I got one. I think I actually got two pairs in show between Butcher and Cosmo that day. I think it was 2 or 3 days later. But anyway, dry aging. I just put a brisket up in a cooler at 38, 35 degrees or something for 20, 30, 40 days, 34 days. Some people have a different number of days. Wet aging, you put plastic on it. You encompass it. And then you leave it in there for 30, 45 days. dry aged, I think, is what everybody uses. You can get a Wagyu brisket and age it yourself. I mean, you can get any kind of brisket and age it yourself. The only problem is you got to make sure that temperature stays right. 40 days is a long time. Let them do it commercially. That's their living. They've got to check that temperature. They have to have that refrigeration. They got whole rooms that are refrigerated down to it. And people in the refrigerator open, close. Next thing you know, you got a problem. You know, when it comes to chicken, they got that organic chicken now. And everybody's using that for their barbecue contest, which some people are turning in chicken thighs that are big as a 50-cent piece. Well, I guess all you really need is a bite. I think scraping skin and doing fat on the skin is a lot more challenging. Pieces are bigger. You got more meat to work with. Of course, cooking a little inchy-deechy piece of meat, they call it organic, you ain't hardly got nothing to cook. So, you know, you cook it 30, 45 minutes and get your two-bite piece and turn it in. Probably makes it a whole lot easier. Get yourself a steroid chicken. You got a lot to work with. It's some major work going on right there. Now, I don't know. I think you noticed all the videos I've done have all been steroid chicken with the bigger pieces. And I'll tell you why. Okay, you don't want your kids to have the antibiotics and the steroids. They ain't getting nothing for your money. You know, organic chicken ain't got no meat on it. And you got to pay $6 a pound. Or, you know, it's an incredible amount of price. You can't feed many people when there's no meat on the bone. And for me, you know, my videos, what I'm going to do, I think I'm always going to buy steroid chicken just because it's got more meat value. Well, I tell you, out of the cookers I got now, I got a PG-500. I got that's a Cook Shack Fast Eddie PG-500. I got a Hot Boss Grill. And I got a Smoker Builder Ugly Drum, which I need to paint. And I really love that PG-500. You know, there's a certain smell of barbecue contest when you go. I believe majority of that smell is produced by PG-500s around the country. I think there's a lot of competitors out there using Cook Shacks. Now, they got this kind of thinner one that you could put in the trailer. And I looked on Cook Shack's website today and I didn't see it. I've seen it, though. I've seen and watched it being used. And I gave the video away. I wish I hadn't done it now. But Cook Shack makes a fantastic product. There's a lot of people out there and say, I hate putting up with the ash. Get better pellets. Now, Chris Chadwick put some pellets in that PG-500. Down at the BWCS World Championship. And there was no ash. Them some good pellets Chris Chadwick's got. Might want to get on Facebook, get in touch with Chris Chadwick to find out what kind of pellets he's got and get some. Them pellets really, really, really do a good job. They did a fantastic job. And I didn't see no ash when I did the show the other day. And you use chunky pellets, you're going to have problems. If you use good pellets, you won't have as many problems. I know you guys know the rules about pellets. You never use heating pellets in a PG-500 or in a pellet cooker. And Barbecuer's Delight has got some fantastic quality pellets. The one Chris Chadwick's using has got some fantastic pellets. Cook Shack's got some great pellets. I'm sure there's some other people out there got quality, but I know that those are quality. And we're talking about pellet cookers are the easiest cookers to use out of all of them. Now, gravity flow is pretty easy. Messing with that charcoal is going to get you black. It doesn't matter what you do. You know, of course, you know, barbecue's a hard-working sport. You're supposed to work hard. But pellet cookers have got their own barbecue guru. You know, really, it is like Master said. I mean, you're essentially out there cooking on an oven. You know, and that's true. I mean, it runs on electric. It's got an electric eye that burns the wood. Right there, I mean, if you're a purist at all, that's a disqualification right there. Because you're using electric to burn the wood. Yeah, you might be burning wood, but you're still using electric to burn it. You know, so that's an electrical situation there. And, but the fire does good. I mean, the fire, it really puts out a fantastic flame. You know, it's they do a good job with it. And I just want to point out to everybody that I have went pay-per-view on the Barbecue Superstars cooking channel. I'm sure a lot of you have run into it already. And I did that because it got picked up by a cable channel. And they're building a pool of videos you know, they're taking my content and getting ready for to open the channel up, and they're going to charge to watch the cable channel, so I can't take my YouTube channel off of charge, because then they kind of would cancel the cable channel out. The cable channel will be cheaper than the YouTube channel. So when it's actually launched, I'll let everybody know. And they're going to re-edit some of my stuff and do trailers and all kinds of stuff. They're going to turn it all into television. And the television people got it. And it's a miracle. I got so much stuff, I don't know how long it's going to take them to get enough content for them to say that it is a valid cable channel to go ahead and release it. But it's probably going to take a while. Everything I do is in HD. That way, hopefully, it'll stay good longevity. You do a lot of this internet type video, within a year or two, it starts looking pretty bad. Trying to make all my stuff last, you know, 10 years, 15 years, forever. Well, college football is upside down. The state of Mississippi has went nuts. The state of Mississippi is totally dominating college football. I actually went back to my tailgate page on the University of Mississippi and Mississippi State and added all the merchandise. I hadn't even put any merchandise on it because I was like, what's the point? My God, was I wrong. Mississippi State may very well become the next Alabama. Of course, when they unload players, I don't know if they'll have the players to just reload like Alabama does. Alabama just gets better with every season, no matter what players stay or leave. I wish South Carolina was like that, but we tried to reload and found out we were unloaded. We did beat Furman the other day. I was pleased about that. We got that big win against Georgia, which is feathering our cap. I don't see how you could beat Georgia and then lose to Kentucky. Or how you could beat Georgia and lose to Missouri. Georgia went to Missouri and killed them. But Notre Dame actually held their own against Florida State. That was a toss-up game. Notre Dame is a big-time football team. I don't know if they can hold their own against Ole Miss, but had a guy on ESPN that put them in the playoffs. So we'll have to see how everything plays out. But the NFL, I'm really becoming a little disillusioned with because they change players like changing money out of a wallet. There's so much of a turnover of who's on the field that it's not like college where, you know, you can always expect Connor Shaw and current running back, I forget his name, A. Sanders, Swearinger, Jadeveon Clowney. I mean, you knew they were going to take the field every week. Wasn't really too many injuries, except for when the young man got his leg broke extremely bad. Went to the San Francisco 49ers now. You know, I don't think he's playing this year. I thought he was going to start playing this year, but I'm working on the tailgating pages. I'm working on Major League Football and the National Hockey League, but I'm actually going back and adding all the fun stuff now. I've got the mechanics kind of over with, and I'm adding more fun stuff on all the different pages. It's funny how these off weeks work. Seems like there's a lot of teams off every week, but they only get 1 week a year. Now, let's see. I forget our South Carolina running back that did so good, went to the 49ers. He's not on their roster. I don't guess he's ready to play yet because of his bad leg injury. Marcus Lattimore. He's not listed on the – he went to the San Francisco 49ers. I know they're waiting on him Okay, he's about done with the road back. 49ers running back Marcus Lattimore heads back to South Carolina, who had torn the ACL and MCL in his left knee in October. Smith, oh, I'll have to read that. I didn't know Marcus Lattimore had torn his ACL, or was that the major injury? I don't know what. I think his major injury was dislocation of a knee. Okay, so Marcus is practicing full speed now. Wow, how about that? Okay, so he's setting up to get out there. He might be out there before the end of the season's over. I tell you, the best quarterback in Cleveland, Connor Shaw. They need to wipe them other two guys out and put Connor in there. Connor go in there and start winning right away. Congratulations to Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning set all the dang records now, set more records, and he's going to go out number one quarterback all the time without a doubt. He's going to win the Super Bowl this year. Now, whether he comes back after winning the Super Bowl or not, I don't know. I'd love to see him play another year and see if he could win two back-to-back like John Elway did and then retire. That would be cool, but at some point, it gets monotonous. I mean, if he plays three more years and wins four Super Bowls in a row, the NFL is going to turn into the Peyton Manning show. He's good enough to do it. If he's got the people around him, there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, he could absolutely accomplish that. It's funny that he's wearing the same colors now as he did in college, or close, and he's winning. Well, he did win in Indianapolis with blue and white on. He did win the Super Bowl there. I think he went twice. He lost once, and he won once. You know, there's a lot of players on a team, and it's never one player that wins it all. It's a group effort, and well, there's a lot of sauces and rubs coming out now. Now, if you go on Barbecue Superstars to the store tab, you look down, you'll see Championship Row. I attempted to put some more of the sauces on there that you might not see every day. But folks, to be a lot of sauces out there. And some of them are a home run. Now, I got a rub in called Wildcat Holler. And we'll be doing a television show with that. A couple maybe. It looks like a big-time pork chicken rub. I'm sure ribs, too. Ribs, pork, and chicken. I don't think it's quite a biscuit rub, but you could probably use it on brisket. And we use dog day rubs. Now, I've got that video up already, and I'm going to tell you, dog day rubs are awesome. They are competition-ready. If you get those dog day rubs, you can put yourself in the mix to win. I'd put them up there with some of the higher competition rubs in the country. Dog day is fantastic. Well, yeah, I had an epiphany almost like I did with Rumford Grub, Junior Reyes. Junior Reyes Rumford Grub is just totally, totally awesome. Dog Day's on that level. And be honest with you, I talk good about any product, but if it ain't that good, I won't talk about it long. And you'll be hearing me talking about Dog Day for a while because I was really blown away. The color, the flavor, the whole explosion of taste, Dog Day is a top-tier rub. And they've got so many. They've got 6 different ones. And I'm sure there's somebody out there that's using the competition at 1. I don't think the rub's that good would go unnoticed for very long. Dog Day Rubs and Seasonings is the website. There it is. Dog Day Spice Rub. Dog Days. Whoever engineered those rubs did a very excellent job. There they are. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, he sent me all 6 of them. As far as your backyard grillers, if you get Dog Day, you're going to blow everybody's mind. Dog Day is a very high quality rub. I cooked a lot of stuff on that day. And www.dogdayspicerub.com. Chicken rub was phenomenal too. The one thing about Dog Day that's really puts it over the top is the color. You know, visual of food is probably 20%. It ain't 50. It ain't over 50. If you do a barbecue contest and they're scoring a visual as over 50%, that contest is no good. But 20%, I mean, so you can kind of make up your mind whether you think it's going to taste good when you first look at it. Dog Day will pass that test. So if you're in a sanctioned body where it's over 50% for visual, get Dog Day to put on last to get you color. Because that is some awesome stuff right there. And you know, folks, life is a long, long road. And many a winding turn. And you know, I'm going to enjoy my little time at home. I don't get to stay home much. As time passes on, sometimes you just got to go by and smell the roses, you know. Business is hard and it's cold shoulder. And our whole system of living in the United States is totally based on money. Money means success. The only problem is in the United States, you got to spend all your money to live. You can't spend all your money. So even if you make a lot of money, you just have some more stuff. But, you know, in the process of keeping that stuff, quote, you got to continuously spend money, a lot of money. It's a river of money. You have to take it in, you put it back out. You have to take it in, you put it back out. Constant flow of money. And people say, oh, boy, he's worth $500 million. He's probably spending $2 million a year just to maintain everything he's got. But at $500 million, he's going to have some time before he runs out. So, you know, we'd like to go out and win money at the contest. It's all about gambling for the money. But you know what? It's about enjoying life. You know, sometimes it's just about enjoying being with your family. And I'm going to enjoy some time at home just a little bit. And try to smell the roses just for a little while. Well, now, Marcus Lattimore, hopefully we'll be suiting up soon. He's a great running back on that I wonder how you look up a team's injury reserve. Of course, I didn't hear about it. If they did, they didn't say nothing about it. Tim Tebow said that they got some teams expressing interest in him now. You know, they might have to play a little bit different, but just like a man at Seattle, they didn't think, you know, he would have a chance of winning because he was too short. He went out there and won a Super Bowl. It's just like that real short guy from Boston College. He went out there and he played big-time football, too. He was a short guy, but, boy, he sure could sling the ball. It's all about being able to look down the field, though. And I'm sure, you know, a 6'8" quarterback can see the field better than a go to the Barbecue Superstars Top 100 rubs and sauces page. Check it out. We're going to be adding more rubs and sauces. Got a rub or sauce you want to add it to the list, just send it to me. You can get my email. You can get my address off my Facebook page or off the Barbecue Superstars fan page. Go by, send them in here. We'll do a show on it. I did a big television show with that Dog Day. And man, it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. They got some great stuff. Dog Day is a tailgater's dream. And go to www.dogdayspicerub.com and get you some Dog Day and try it. Just go ahead and get you a sample. Get out there and cook with it and see what you think. You're going to love it. And it's going to blow your family and friends' minds, especially backyard cook. Dog Day is some of the best in the business. I have to give them a big, huge congratulations on that one. It's awesome. Well, we're going to take off. We appreciate everybody coming by. I love every one of you out there. Chris Chadwick's out competing this weekend. We hope you have a good time. And we're just taking a little time to rest up and enjoy life. You know, it's a wonderful life. Thank God I still have a home. Yeah, let's take it out with something kind of nice. Here's a nice little song. Y'all have a good night.
Are you lonesome tonight? tonight? Do you miss me tonight? Are you sorry we drifted apart? Does your memory stray to a brighter summer day when I kissed you and called you sweetheart? Do the chairs in your parlor seem empty and bare? Do you gaze at your doorstep and picture me there? Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight? I wonder if you're lonesome tonight. You know, someone said the world's a stage and each must play a part. Fate had me playing in love, he was my sweetheart. Act one was where we met. I loved you at first glance. You read your lines so cleverly and never missed a cue. Then came act two. You seemed to change, you acted strange, and why I've never known. Honey, you lied when you said you loved me, and I have no cause to doubt you. But I'd rather go on hearing your lies than to go on living without you. Now the stage is bare, and I'm standing there with emptiness all around. And if you won't come back to me, then they can bring the curtain down. Is your heart filled with pain? Shall I come back again? Tell me, dear, are you lonesome tonight?
We went down to the FBA, and there was Evergate seasoning with crawfish and filet. I ate a little taste, my eyes got wide. They won the Triple Crown Lakeland, boy, these guys could fly. Evergate seasoning, number one in the world, ranked by barbecue superstars, and they keep winning everything. You better get you some of this Evergate seasoning.
Got the biggest catering job I've ever done today. Sure is scary out here.
No problem, man. I got my Everglades seasoning. Thank goodness I brought the full line with me. I even got their sauce. I ain't gonna have no problem on this catering job. Why, shoot, I might have to go out and get me a little ice cream or something before I get started, because I know I ain't got to worry about nothing. I got my Everglades seasoning, number one in the world, ranked by barbecue superstars. Oh, yeah!
I'm always about passion and enthusiasm, and barbecue is all about passion. So what's going to happen next is we're all going to stand up, and we're going to do a cheer because we need to get that blood moving, and I know that all of you love being passionate about what you do for a living. So what's going to happen is I'm going to do this cheer first. and then I'm going to repeat it, and then we'll all join in. The cheer goes like this. I feel happy. I feel healthy. I feel terrific. So let me repeat that so I know some of you guys were out last night and you got it down. It goes, I feel happy. I feel healthy. I feel terrific. And on the count of three, we'll all join in. Here we go. One, two, three. I feel happy. I feel healthy. I feel terrific. That was pretty lousy for a bunch of rib cooks. Now, and I saw some of you were looking around and you were thinking, this is kooky. Do I really have to do this? And some of you had your hands in your pockets. Some of you had your hands folded. But I know there are times in your life you have no problem letting it all hang out, wearing some goofy pig outfit, and you have no problem letting the world know that you're passionate about barbecue. So let's do it again, and this time just let her hang, let her rip on the count of three. One, two, three. I feel happy. I feel healthy. I feel terrific. All right, now, I know that every one of you is a winner, so repeat after me. I am a winner.
I am a winner.
I am a champion.
I am a champion.
Now, what I want you to do is think about this. Look at the person next to you. They may be a living legend in barbecue. And think about yourself and think about that other person. How many millions of gallons of barbecue sauce that person has probably cooked up. Think about how many tons of ribs that person next to you has probably smoked up. So look to that person and say, I am in awe of you.
I am in awe of you.
And you are?
And you are?
Good looking. All right, be seated. Now, I always start off my talks talking about passion because I had the opportunity of traveling the country and meeting with many other successful business owners, and I'm a learner, and I will ask these other successful business owners, what does it take to be successful? And almost always, they always say, it takes somebody who's passionate, somebody who's enthusiastic. And where I'm from, up in the Twin Cities, well, originally in Chicago, we have the Bears, we have the Vikings, and what amazes me is you will have grown people sitting in the stands who are willing to paint their bodies, one side purple, the other side gold, and they'll wear helmets with pointy horns on them and long gold braids, or like the Bears, you know. We got people that get so passionate about what they do for a living, and yet most of us would never show up for work like that. But, you know, I'm so happy and fortunate to be part of this barbecue business because in barbecue, we do dress up goofy. Many of you have seen people dress up like this. Now, I'm excited, though, to be part of this incredible industry called barbecue. I think it's one of the fastest growing industries. But let me tell you more than that. I really believe that barbecue is God ordained. Because back in Ecclesiastes, the good Lord is telling Moses to tell Aaron to go build him an altar. Now we all know that the altar is the precursor to the modern day grill. And then he said, go out and get me your best goat. So right there, we know the good Lord is all about being best of the best. He didn't want just some average goat. He wanted the best goat. And then he said, chop it up and then wash it with water. So right there again, we know that the good Lord is very particular about cleanliness. And then he said, take and build me a fire made out of wood. Ladies and gentlemen, if this ain't barbecue, I don't know what is. But the last instruction that he gave Moses to tell Aaron is to build him that wood and then put the goat on top of it in pieces along with the fat. And then the last verse says, and the aroma was pleasing unto the Lord. So I really believe that barbecue is God ordained, and every one of you here is blessed to be making barbecue. Now, Whenever I talk about passion and I talk about barbecue, you know, it's always about energy. And you look at how passionate every one of you guys are about barbecue. And I never realized how much this passion and enthusiasm and energy was actually carrying over into my own home. And I was out traveling, and, you know, I do a lot of traveling to the different restaurants and also the vendors that we have. And this particular time, I was coming back from Chicago, and I was driving up into my driveway, and I could see my wife was watching me looking out from the window, and she was all excited, had a big smile on her face, and I finally parked, and she came bouncing up, and as I opened my door, she jumped up and gave me a big kiss, and I said, "Honey, I don't think I have ever seen you this excited to see me come home." She says, "Well, I'm excited to see you home, but more than that, since you've been gone so much, I've decided that with all this extra time I have on my hands, that I need a hobby. So this last trip that you've been on, I went and saw your friends over at Golden Plump, and they gave me 5 chickens and 2 roosters, and I've taken up farming." And I said, "Well, honey, any farmer knows that you don't need 2 roosters to take care of 5 hens." She looked at me like only a wife could do, and she said, "Oh, yeah, you do when one travels all the time." But like the video shared earlier, my story really could be one of a story of against all odds. I wasn't born on the right side of the tracks, and both of my parents are Native American. And both of them, how they met was really unfortunate, because a lot of people often say, "Well, you know, I know that Idabel, Oklahoma, where your dad is from, is way down south, and your mom is from the Lakota Ray Reservation, Hayward, Wisconsin, which is way up north in the northwest corner of Wisconsin. How did they ever meet?" Well, both of my parents were actually taken by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and a lot of people never think this type of stuff happens in this generation, but both of my parents were taken by the Bureau of Indian Affairs and stuck in Indian boarding schools. And they happened to meet at Haskell Institute for Indians in Lawrence, Kansas. And they fell in love, fortunately for me, got married, and moved to Chicago. Now, my dad, being from the South, missed his Southern soul food cooking. And when they first got married, he used to haul my mom down South almost every other weekend till she learned how to cook Southern. That's how important barbecue and Southern cooking was in my home. I grew up eating some of the best fried chicken, okra, cornbread. My dad's midnight snack used to be cornbread broken up in a glass of buttermilk poured over it. And the barbecue, you know, a lot of families, and back in the late 50s, early 60s, we weren't exactly poor, but we were both my parents were very hard workers. And I can remember going out to eat, which was different than most other kids, because we never went to regular restaurants. We always went to barbecue joints. And my parents kept a penny jar in the pantry, and they would empty their pennies in there. And then every couple of weeks, we'd all sit down at the family table, and we would count the pennies. And every once in a while, there would be this big, huge silver dollar. And later I found out my dad was sticking him in there because he wanted to go eat some barbecue. And whenever we had enough money, we would go to Eddie's Ribs in Chicago. I don't know if anybody ever remembers Eddie's Ribs, but they had one of those aquarium smokers in the window. And I can remember as a kid, when we got to go to Eddie's Ribs, that my dad would drive up, and almost 2 blocks away, he would roll down the windows, and you could smell that hickory smoke. And then when he parked the car, I'd go running up to the window, and I could see the ribs smoking over the smoldering hickory, and see the sparks jump up every time some pork fat, rib fat, hit the smoking, smoldering hickory logs there, and the sparks jumped up. And as a little kid, I was memorized by that. And then when we'd walk in, you'd hear the chop, chop of them with a big cleaver chopping the ribs up. And for me as a kid, those were some of my most favorite experiences. And Barry, I don't know if you remember that. We have Barry Sorkin from Smoke. This guy does an incredible brisket back there. Barry, say hi. If you're ever in Chicago, you gotta check out Smoke. This guy does barbecue right. But my story about Chicago and barbecue really gets started because times were tough back then, and to make ends meet, we would go and cook at my mom's Honor the Earth powwows. And really, this is my first restaurant. A lot of people say, well, Dave, where'd you learn how to cook barbecue? And how did you get into the restaurant business? Well, this was my first restaurant. And you talk about a rags-to-riches story, this is it. This is nothing more than a tarp-covered lean-to tarp. There's my mom in the middle, my dad on the side. And what I learned from my mom back then was how to be enthusiastic and greeting every person. She just had a wonderful smile. And even though this is nothing more than a lean-to shack, you can see everything has its place and everything is spick and span clean. And then my dad, what I learned from my dad was the importance of ingredients. Now, being from the South, he used to travel down South about twice a year, and he would buy certain hot sauces. He liked sorghum syrups. He would buy sorghum syrups. He would buy certain cornmeals. He would buy certain hot peppers that we couldn't buy up in the North. But he would travel hundreds and hundreds of miles just to make sure he had the right ingredients. And it's those type of experiences that stuck with me all these years when I started Famous Dave's, my love for finding the right ingredients and taking the time. 25 years in the beginning, I would often take seasonings and I would take bites out of Scotch bonnet peppers or serrano peppers, and I would just fill my mouth and sweat would come pouring out of my pores. And you know what I found out, though? Your lips are never going to fall off. Your tongue ain't going to explode, but you start to learn the nuances of how to create recipes with peppers and how to get the hotness from there. And by the way, you could see back then how bashful I was. I was trying to hide from the camera, and people, when I go around and I share my talks, and they'll come up to me afterwards and they'll say, Dave, you're so energetic and you're passionate. Well, at one time in my life, I never was. In fact, the first speech I ever gave was to some students at the University of Chicago, and there's about 300 people, and I was so nervous. The suit coat that I was wearing was wringing wet in the armpits. I never once looked at my audience, and all the perspiration that was falling onto my notes just turned them into a mess. My 45-minute speech lasted all of 10 minutes, and then I ran out the door, and I swore that I would never get up in front of another group again the rest of my life. But I also realized that if I was ever going to realize my dreams, if I was going to be able to share people my story, my hopes, my dreams, and my passion, that my life had to change. And so for years in my parents' basement, I would stand in front of a $5 mirror that I had bought from Kmart, and I would read books out loud to myself. I would spend hours in that basement, and I would say the ABCs. I had a candle that I held in front of my face, and I would try and put out that candle saying the numbers 1, 2, 3, are reading books. And I even shook hands with myself in there in that mirror and smiled at myself and winked at myself, and today I can wink with both eyes. Now I share these things about myself because I believe it's important that where you are today doesn't necessarily determine where you're going to end up in life. And fortunately for me, when I was growing up, like the video said, I never believed that I would ever succeed in life. I thought I was the dumbest kid in class, and then later on I had a chance to meet a friend that we became good friends over the years, Zig Ziglar. And for some reason he took a liking to me, and he's one of the most inspiring, motivational guys you'll ever meet. He's passed on this last year, but I had a chance to meet him at an earlier age, and we got to be friends, and he said, Dave, it doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter what you've been through, the only thing that matters in this great country is that if you have a dream, if you're willing to work hard, that anything is possible. And then he told me to start reading. And here, you know, I had attention deficit disorder. I mean, I would look at books and everything looked scrambled. But I kept at it because Zig Ziglar believed in me enough to say that you to never, ever quit, to persevere. And so I kept reading. I would read one book. And one of the books I read was had a quote in it by Earl Nightingale. And this quote became so meaningful for me because it said, "You become what you think about all of the time." You know, and that's like barbecue. You know, that's what I was thinking about. But I had other things on my mind, too, and I kept pondering that. What does he mean, you become what you think about all of the time? Does that mean I'm going to turn into a blonde? But that one book led to another book. And I became on a rampage of learning. And today, I have probably one of the biggest collections of cookbooks. And my Bastions of Barbecue tour, where I would go around and I would learn from other people. And I have probably been in many of your restaurants, stolen your menus. You may see some of them in there. By the way, many people have stolen my menus. You know, that's how you learn. And I have thousands of bottles of barbecue sauce. I go out and collect them. And, you know, sometimes people will say, "Well, Dave, when you go into a city, aren't you afraid that you're going to put somebody out of business?" I say, "No, because that has never happened. I believe what we do is we increase the industry. We get more people more aware of barbecue. We create a bigger industry for barbecue because every one of us is different. Every one of you has your own incredible flavors and what you do with your ribs, what you do with your briskets or your pork butts. You know, every one of you has your own secret butt juice, and every one of you does something a little bit different. And so I enjoy that, and I go and I support other restaurants. I have, so you know, over the years, I literally have been in thousands of barbecue restaurants just to learn what they do, and I appreciate what other people do. But this can show you just how passionate I am about barbecue. But one of the things that I wanted to say is that when I was growing up in the streets of Chicago, I never did think that I could succeed. And I can remember looking out of our third floor apartment that had no air conditioning. And back then, it seemed like the streets of Chicago would get so hot from the temperatures being up over hundreds of degrees. And it seems like we don't have those hot summers like we did back in the late 50s or early 60s, where the temperatures would be up over 100 degrees for days on end. But I can remember my mom sticking us on this railroad train, the Soo Line, that left Chicago and went through, it seems like, every town in Chicago or Wisconsin at night. And then we get to Spooner, and my mom took us to the cool north woods of where her grandmother's house was. And we would travel down dusty roads till we got to the Lac-Couturier Reservation, where there was nothing more than a shack where my grandmother lived. No running water, no electricity. And as a kid, what I remember most was how tough it was to make ends meet and then try and make food from the food that we got. And at these type of food booths, we would make venison sandwiches. We would, and really, that's how I learned how to dress out a pig from dressing out a lot of deers. And we made venison sandwiches. And the chicken wild rice soup that we served in this fry bread stand is actually the chicken wild rice soup that we now serve in our restaurants today. But as a little kid, I remember staying in my grandmother's house and the shack in the north woods of Wisconsin. And looking out my grandmother's window at night, I would look into this vast sky, because in Chicago, you really don't see the sky at night, and just how incredibly dark the sky was. And I, as a little kid, I remember seeing all these billions and billions of stars. And then I would see some stars that shone bright. And I often wondered as a little kid, would my life be like one of these stars that just shone so bright in the sky? Would my life be like that? Or would my life be like one of the other billions and billions of stars that just seem to fade off into the vastness of space? But one of the things I learned was how important it is that each and every one of us follow our dreams. And I've had a presidential appointment. I've been in Washington, D.C. And you could see our government today. The Republicans won't vote for the Democrats, and the Democrats won't vote for the Republicans. And what I've learned from that experience is that the real strength of America is what happens in our communities. And that's why it's so great to be here at the National Barbecue Association, because barbecue is America's food. And the people in this room, you guys are passionate. And when you go back in your communities, and whether you do cook-offs or you compete or you have your restaurants, how you interact with the people that come in or the people that you meet is so important. If we can bless them the way we love them up, the way we hug them, and the way we share our great tasting barbecue, we can make a difference in America. And I believe, really, at the heart and soul of what we do, we're all about making people happy. And in some of my travels, we go out and we're on the rib circuit. We serve a lot of ribs over the years, and we do this. We have like a traveling, looks like a NASCAR team, but we spend all summer, we travel around, and we serve up our ribs, and I really think it's important to get out and be part of the community. And by the way, every one of you knows that if you're a good rib cook, you got to have a big wood pile. And I can tell you there's some good apple wood in there, there's some good cherry, a lot of good hickory. And this is my first restaurant, Famous Dave's. And when I was building this restaurant in a little town of Hayward, Wisconsin, which is way up in the North Woods, people thought I was crazy. And they would drive by when I was building my first restaurant, and they would say, "Dave, what are you building?" I said, "I'm building the world's best rib joint." And they would look at me and they would say, "Are you crazy? In Hayward, Wisconsin, there ain't nothing but Swedes and Norwegians up here. They have no clue about barbecue. You should go build your restaurant in Kansas City or Memphis, where people really appreciate barbecue." But I had a dream. And my dream was to have the best rib joint in America. And I would look at them and I would tell them, and I would say, "You may think I'm crazy to build a rib restaurant in Hayward, Wisconsin, a town of only 1,800 people, but when I open up, I'm going to have the best ribs in America. I'm going to have the best barbecue sauce in America. I'm going to have the best honey buttered cornbread, the best country roasted chicken, the best melt-in-your-mouth Texas beef brisket, and the best scrumptious bread pudding that just oozes and goes." Oh, getting hungry. I don't know what you guys have been eating the last half hour here, but "I'm going to have the best homemade barbecue baked beans, the best coleslaw." That was my dream. And because I never gave up on that dream, in a town of 1,800 people, without any advertising, by the end of the year, we were serving 4,000 to 6,000 people a week. Never advertised, and people would drive from Chicago. People would drive from Minneapolis, Green Bay, all over the Midwest. In fact, Mike, one of our restaurant owners down in Tennessee, will tell you, we used to have somebody drive up all the way once a month from where, Mike?
It was from somewhere on the south, I remember, Alabama.
We used to drive up just to come and eat barbecue at Famous Dave's. That's the power of barbecue. You won't find that happening for burgers or chili or anything else, but barbecue, there's something about barbecue that people become addicted to. That's how wonderful and great our industry is. And so at Famous Dave's here, this was my first restaurant, little town of only 1,800 people, and I'm really proud of this little restaurant that I built. And here I am in front of my smoker there. We don't serve no namby-pamby baked or boiled ribs. This is the real deal, folks. Just had to show you that. We have a lot of fun there at Famous Dave's. But I think the highlight of my career was being able to be on Wall Street just a couple years ago. And NASDAQ, Famous Dave's is traded on NASDAQ under the symbol D-A-V-E, Dave. That's kind of neat. And just to give you an idea, back in March of 2009, our stock was at $2. And during the worst economy, we've been able to take our stock up to $10, floating right around $10, which is an incredible story. But I also think it's an incredible testament to the people, our customers, our guests who love barbecue. And NASDAQ told us when we were on right there in Times Square, this is a 10-story TV. It's the largest TV. It's even larger than the TVs down at the stadium in Dallas. They said this was the most colorful video that they've ever had on their NASDAQ screen there. So this was quite an honor. And what I want to share with you, though, is that when this economy hit, a lot of us had some tough times. Personally, I've had some tough times. Our business had some tough times. And we realized, though, that if things were going to turn around, that we needed to think differently about going about our business. So at Famous Dave's, what we said was, we're not going to subscribe to what everybody else is talking about. All this negativity about how the economy is tough and how we're losing jobs and how the economy is putting people out of business. Instead, we are going to be positive. We're going to be motivated. And we that year, we spent more on training our young people that were working in our restaurants and our entire corporate staff. We retrained everybody. And it was so important because, you know, when you're out there, you're getting bombarded by all this negativity and how the economy's bad. But one of the key things that we changed was we quit talking about how the economy was bad out there. Instead, we got everybody to say, how you doing, Chris? Chris Lilly, this is the world's best rib cook. You ask him, he'll tell you. I also saw Amy. Now, we weren't supposed to talk about this, but I'm going to go ahead and they can shoot me if they want. But we were all together on some program that will be seen in May. It's an incredible program. Now, I didn't say anything, did I? Amy's giving me the evil eye. But there's some good people in this room. Every one of you, I love you guys to death. Every one of you has your own incredible story of how you came about your own sauces, your own barbecue. And I was telling these guys running around with the camera, you know, you got some living legends in this room. People like Mike Mills. And we ought to get their story and archive them for the National Barbecue Association. We should have their stories up on the National Barbecue Association's website. And I know Brad Orson, this guy, he's going to be a living legend, too. There he is. I tell you, this is one passionate guy. He has done so much for barbecue just in his short years. I'm glad you're part of the industry, Brad. And same way with Brooke. You guys are a couple of cute kids that are just spreading the joy of barbecue wherever you go. Well, I always say this famous. By the way, I take none of this personally, and everybody will say, "Hey, there's Famous Dave." And I always say, "I ain't famous. It's the ribs. I'm just a cook. I'm just a cook, bottle washer." These are our catering trucks. About 30% of our business is takeout and catering. This is for some of you who've never been inside of Famous Dave's. This is kind of what they look like. But also, too, in my life, I've learned that to make a difference, we need to make a difference in the lives of our young people. And we do a work that we call Life Skills. We work with young people. And this is my chance to do nothing more than unabashed sales promotion. I have Famous Dave's Backroads and Side Streets. This is an incredible cookbook. It did win Best Barbecue Grill Cookbook in America. It has all my secret recipes in here, and I spill the beans, and the pictures in this are phenomenal. The photographer I used did a lot of pictures for rock stars, photographed three presidents. It's an incredible cookbook. I spill the beans on all my secrets in here. And then I also have a great DVD. You need to get this. It has, again, all my secrets in here. And then a lot of people often say, you know, Dave, you've been through a lot. You've experienced a lot. Do you have any insights in how to run your business? Or are there any philosophies that you have? So I finally put them down. It's called Famous Dave Anderson's Recipes for Success, How to Get Fired Up, Be Famous, and Smoke the Competition. And I would recommend that any of you who have your own business, you should get this or get it for your employees or any of you that have children. There's a lot of good life lessons. Over 30 years of lessons learned the hard way. You can read in about 3 hours. It's a great little book. And then, just recently, I just completed a book called Report Cards to Paychecks. I only have a few of these. Famous Dave's Get Fired Up Strategies for Succeeding in College and in Life. We have a lot of young kids that work in our restaurants, and I've taken my best lessons and put it in this book. I would recommend. We only have like 6 copies of this. It's like a first edition. There's only like 100 of these. There's typos in it, so be aware of that. But more is coming soon. And the reason why I bring these books up is because we don't keep a single penny of these proceeds. All the books that we sell in our restaurants, and we have raised over $1 million to give back to the work that we do with kids. And Carolyn Wells, are you in the room here? Carolyn was so kind to write the foreword to this, and she's always been a big supporter of over the years. But we are changing lives with young kids. We are making a difference in the lives of young kids. And we got recognized by Oprah Winfrey. I actually have an Angel Award that we've received for the work that we're doing in working with kids. Now, one of the things that somebody asked me, Dave, it seems like you've had some incredible experiences. Could you share with me just one thought how I could be successful in everything that I do? And so how many of you would like to hear me spill the beans on the secret sauce to my success?
Yeah.
Well, here it is. I'm going to give you, in a few short moments here, the secret to my success. And it may surprise you. It's no silver bullet, but one of the things that I've learned in being successful in life is to be able to handle problems. And you're thinking, this guy's going to stand up here and tell me that I need to be successful in problems, or this guy has no idea about the problems I've had. Well, yes, I do, because I have been there. I've been broke to the point where I've watched every window on my block, the window shade go up because people were looking out and watching the repo guy haul away the family cars. And I don't think any of you will know how embarrassing it is to pawn your wife's jewelry just so you could pay the rent. And when we were first starting out, Famous Days, there were many days when we would have to run around and sweep the registers just so we could get the money to the bank before the payroll checks bounced. I've been there. I know. I go down to Kentucky Fried Chicken and lick their fingers. Been so broke. But one of the things that I realized is that if you're going to be successful, is that sometimes you got to change. And a lot of people go through life thinking that change happens out there. And really, change happens here. If you always did what you always did, you're always going to get what you always got. Or the thinking and behavior that got you to where you are today is not the thinking and behavior that you need to stretch to where you want to go tomorrow. And probably one of the things, if I could ever share with you, is how important problems are to being successful in life. You would never curse God again. Because so many times when we're faced with crisis and adversities, like we have just come through one of the most incredible economic collapses and meltdowns. We watch the people, what's happening in Japan. Or how would you like to raise children in Egypt or Libya? Sometimes we have no idea what problems are in this country. But yet there are times when we want to curse the Almighty God and say, what's the matter, Lord? In your good book it says that blessings and abundance are mine. But it seems like all I ever get is adversities and crisis. And what I found out in life is that when you're going up that ladder of success, that you're not going up that ladder of success because you are working harder or you are smarter. What I found out is that those who succeed in life go up that ladder of success because they have decided to step up and take responsibility for having their share of the problems. You see, problems are where opportunities come from. Problems are God's blessings to us. And the good Lord, when he's watching us run away from some adversity or some crisis, he's looking down and saying, don't you quit on me. Stay in there. Because so often, we the doors of opportunity, the doors of success are right around the corner, but we quit. We quit too soon. And so often, we want to blame other people. Hey, don't talk to me. That's Joe's problem. Or this one. They ain't paying me enough to have those problems. Have you ever heard that? I know I have, because I used to use it. But what I found out is that success in life, or in success in business, it's about hanging in there, persevering with those problems, having a dream, and never letting anybody crush your dreams, having a vision that is so strong. And if you cut these arms, you're going to see barbecue come rolling out. By the way, I've been looking for this opportunity for so long to be able to share that barbecue is really an Indian thing. So many people, some people think our black brothers, you know, invented barbecue. It's an Indian thing. Because many years ago, before Columbus came, a group of our Indian relatives were out hunting. And they found a bunch of wild pigs. And they gathered up those pigs, they caught them, tied them up, and they brought them back to their encampment, to where all their teepees were. And they were inside their teepee, and they were eating a porridge made up of wild sugar cane and wild Indian corn. And while they were in there eating this porridge, they heard a huge storm blow up, and then they heard a huge clap of lightning. And they got scared, and sure enough, they ran outside, and here a bolt of lightning had struck that tree where they had their pigs tied up, set it all ablaze. That tree was burning, and the tree was falling on their pigs, not knowing what to do. They ran inside, grabbed that porridge made up of sugar cane and sweet corn, ran outside, poured it on the pigs. And ladies and gentlemen, here at the National Barbecue Association's annual convention, you guys have heard it first, American Indians discovered barbecue. I feel really blessed to be here today, feel really honored, and hopefully shared a few life lessons about never giving up on your problems, always staying true to your passion and your dreams. And really, this is an incredible group. I know each and every one of you has been through your own tough times, your own hardships, but yet you come out and support this wonderful association. And I would encourage you to continue to support the National Barbecue Association or KCBS or any of the other groups that are represented here to you today. And I also, there's a new one that's just out. Write this down, bbqbackyard.com. bbqbackyard.com. If you're not a member, please join up. It's an incredible social media website. And with that, I'd like to close with a poem that I always share. By the way, my famousdaveanderson.com is there. Join me on Facebook as well. The poem I want to leave you with is called The Builder. I saw a gang of men from my hometown, a gang of men tearing a building down. With a heave and a ho and a yes, yes, yell, they swung a beam and a sidewalk fell. And I went up to the foreman. I said, "Foreman, are these men skilled as the ones you'd use if you had to build?" He looked at me and he laughed and he said, "No, no indeed." He said, "Common labor is all I need, for I can destroy in a day what it's taken a builder 10 years to build." And I asked myself as I went my way, which one of these roles am I playing? Am I one who's constantly tearing things down as I carelessly make my way around? Or am I one whose community will be a little bit better just because I was there? And it's my hope and prayer that as you go your way, that you will make a difference in your own community. Stay true to your dreams. Be a person of integrity, because I truly believe that America is the best country on the face of this earth, and barbecue is America's food, and this organization is doing its share to make sure that America is a great place to live. Thank you, and God bless. Thank you. And I'll be right outside here to autograph and sign any book. And again, we don't keep a single penny of it. It goes to change lives. Thank you and God bless.